Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that makes decisions each and every week about the movies we choose to see. Sometimes those decisions are good, sometimes they're, well, maybe we should describe them not so much bad as, say, misguided. In any event, they often lead to lively discussions. This past week, the three of us saw a trio of films, each of which is certainly worth debating, even if we may not reach a consensus on their relative quality. First up is a religious would-be satire, Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, followed by a trial-by-conscience biopic, Benediction, and finally a trek into a mental illness horror study, Resurrection. Let's begin with a bit of old-time religion. Over the decades, numerous films have explored the world of religious orders and the trials of those who battle the notion of sin, especially in themselves. Using her own 2018 short film as a starting point, writer-director Adama Igbo, working with her producer twin sister Adane Igbo, tells the story of Trinity Childs, played by Regina Hall, and pastor husband Lee Curtis Childs, played by Sterling K. Brown, as they try to rebound from scandal. Once co-leaders of a popular Southern Baptist megachurch, the couple faces both the resentment of many, if not most, of their former congregation, and the threat posed by another religious power couple, played by Nicole Beharie and Confidence, who are opening their own church. Igbo's film never specifically addresses the scandal, though it's fairly clear what it involves, but it does focus on Trinity as she attempts to navigate her way past Lee Child's weaknesses and her own quest to regain some sense of the spiritual leader that she thought she was. The performances, both of Hall and Brown, familiar to those of us who watch the television show This Is Us, are riveting. The ultimate question, though, is does Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul have anything new to say?
Well, I don't know if I'm even the right person to be commenting on this movie. I don't know if either of you are either, because I'm not familiar with the world of this film, of Baptist churches and Black Baptist churches in particular. So it's totally possible that I am missing jokes that the target audience for this movie might totally get and think are really funny. But I'm kind of with you on this one, that as a comic mockumentary, because part of the structure of this movie is that these two people are being followed by a documentary crew, and we see scenes from this documentary that's being put together as kind of almost like crisis management, like they're trying to heal their reputations, and that's intercut with scenes from their private lives where the cameras aren't following them. So as a mockumentary, I didn't particularly find it very funny. I laughed a few times, and almost all of those laughs came specifically from Regina Hall's line deliveries and the way that she looks at the camera, because that's now a tried and true tradition of these kinds of movies and shows, is that you have the character who's constantly aware of the camera and is always looking at it and looking directly at us in the audience. So she gets some laughs out of that, surprising amount of mileage out of that tired old bit. And as a satire of religious fundamentalism, of hypocrisy, of all of those things, I sort of agree with you that it doesn't have much new to say. And I actually think it isn't vicious enough. I think at the end, it extends empathy to a certain amount of empathy to, if not both of them, then certainly to the Regina Hall character, to a point that I almost didn't think that character quite earned. And then along the way, we get these jokes about they can't decide if they want to say amen or amen, which I didn't find that particularly funny. And that's a bit that goes on for a while. And I don't know, jokes about the fact that she's buying really expensive hats to wear for Sunday service. I mean, is it supposed to be funny that the hat costs $2,000. I don't know. I never felt like I was on the same page as this movie, and that may be a failing of mine. But I think, you know, I agree with you too, though, that you have these two performances at the center that are rich in ways that I feel like the material isn't. I feel like Hall and Brown are bringing levels to these characters that maybe isn't in the script. And this is a first-time filmmaker basing this off of a short film that I also believe was sort of inspired by events from her own life. But yeah, Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, which, and I also like that title. The title is what piqued my interest in the first place. And then seeing Regina Hall, who I love, made me want to see this. But I think that if you want comedy, contemporary comedy that's about this sort of thing, I would recommend the HBO series The Righteous Gemstones that Danny McBride and Jody Hill make. I think that has more to say about the current state of religion and just about how these people are such buffoons and aren't practicing what they're preaching. It's so much – it's got teeth where I don't think this movie has teeth, and I think that's kind of what it
or it doesn't have enough teeth.
Yeah, sure.
Well, and you keyed in on something that could be important. I mean, this – previously was a short film, and maybe it should have stayed there.
I haven't seen the short film. I don't know.
So I guess here's where I'm a little conflicted. I mean, the filmmakers were able to attract these two really high-powered, on-the-ascendancy stars to, you know, showcase the underlying film. And also, I want to give a huge shout-out to Nicole Beharie, who we saw in the film Breaking.
She's also in a movie called Miss Juneteenth.
Yes,
that I would
exactly.
recommend. She's amazing in that.
Yes, exactly. And so she's really caught my attention. So the performances here are great. And I'm glad I was able to see this at home because I felt the same way as you did, Nathan. I wasn't sure. I mean, I did laugh at several points, mainly because I thought that Regina Hall and Nicole Beharie were just really funny, you know, trying to play these sincere, like, co-pastor wives, first lady, whatever.
And trying to play it cool while chaos is going on around
them. Yeah, and making statements to each other that are so pregnant with meaning,
And condescension. Yes. And yeah.
But we never really fully understood, like, why did some people choose to stay with this mega pastor? You know, is it making a broader statement about, like you said, evangelical big box mega churches, or is this sort of unique to this particular setting? And the only real familiarity that I have with mocking some of these church traditions comes from Saturday Night Live. And I'm thinking specifically of John Mulaney and the church fan episode that he did.
Let's not forget Dana Carvey as church lady going back.
True. So I never knew, you know, what was supposed to be more deeply funny. And so I felt exactly the same way you did.
I want to go back to the only thing that I'm really comfortable talking about in terms of this movie. That is the performances, which you both have touched on. And, you know, we know Regina Hall. We've seen her, and we know she has comedy chops. I mean, she was in Girls Trip. And, of course, Tiffany Haddish is the main star of that
scary movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she can do it. The surprise for me was Sterling K. Brown because, you know, I mean, Mary Patton, I have a thing.
You weren't a This Is Us fan.
I was not a This Is Us fan because, to me, it just is a tearjerker, a television show. But he's pretty good in it. And I got to tell you, so many of these guys, both men and women, so many of these actors have proven that they can be really good television actors, but they just don't make the jump, right? They don't capture the same sense of power on the big screen. Sterling K. Brown is a big screen actor. He took his shirt off, and I literally fell off the couch. This guy is something.
Wish there had been a documentary crew filming that.
See, he had a whole scene in This Is Us about being partially clothed, just saying.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you that he really proved it. It wasn't just physically. He has charisma.
Well, and
big screen charisma.
And the thing that he brings to that performance as well is that you understand why a congregation would follow this guy.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Because he has charisma, and, I mean, he looks like a movie star already, and so you get that. I want to go back in talking about Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul, talking about that mockumentary element, because I think it's the thing that's really lacking here alongside the satire. But I think that if you're going to do what this movie does, which is it's, I don't know, maybe a third mockumentary and then two-thirds scripted scenes that aren't within the context of a documentary crew is following these people. If you're going to do that, I think there has to be a wider juxtaposition between what's happening in both of those things, because within the context of this documentary, things are falling apart, and then it cuts to these scenes in their real lives and things are falling apart. And I feel like if they had done more to maybe make those disparate parts of the film even more disparate, I think the comedy would have worked a little bit better, if that makes sense.
The only thing that I want to say about that is that it does work in the sense that they are trying to control this documentary.
Right.
And we slowly begin to understand that they are not in control.
Right.
And that the person who – I forget, they keep using a name, Deborah or something, you know. I forget the name of the filmmaker.
And they're trying to be fly on the wall, so they're not interfering. The crew isn't interfering. But eventually they become part of their lives in a way.
Right. But they're actually making a documentary.
Yeah.
And so the documentary is not going to show them in the best light. And so I thought that worked, but...
But it's so apparent from the start, and then it doesn't really have anywhere to go with that idea.
I agree.
Well, and here's part of our problem. We're talking about, oh, well, this is like sort of a tired conceit and so forth and so on. But, you know, just last week we had another pastor of a, you know, megachurch come out and confess some wrongdoing, not exactly the same. And that was the other thing that concerned me here. It was sort of like I didn't know if this was making a broader statement about the fact that the pastor was attracted to men. And we never really knew how to factor that into whether it was a satire, whether it was a commentary.
It seemed like,
that concerned me.
Well, it seemed like just the way that they deal with that, that it's not so much about what he's doing. It's that he's doing it while preaching that thing is a sin. And, you know, I think they're pointing out the hypocrisy, which, again, we've seen before. And like you said, you can mine it a million times over because it keeps happening.
Yeah.
There's a reason that this is still a subject. But, yeah, I know that some people are really responding to this movie, and I didn't. But I did respond to those performances, and I'll watch Regina Hall do anything, so whatever she
does,
I'll
follow her.
Apparently
Dan wants to watch
Sterling K. Brown.
You know, and I want to watch Nicole Beharie.
Yeah, she's great, too.
And that was our discussion of Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Benediction and Resurrection. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Spokane Public Radio is heard by listeners in communities all across our region. And according to an NPR 2022 survey, public radio listeners care about and are involved with just about every aspect of their communities. They also care about the public radio stations that keep their communities informed and connected. To find out how your business can support Spokane Public Radio, call 509-328-5729. Or look for more information on SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Murray Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. Let's now move to two streaming selections, Benediction and Resurrection. The dictionary defines benediction as a blessing, in religious terms or in a larger sense, something that promotes goodness or well-being, even an expression of good wishes. That's the term that writer-director Terence Davies gave to a cinematic profile of the English poet Siegfried Sassoon, which stars Jack Loudon as a young man and Peter Capaldi in his elder years. True to his style, Davies, whose previous works include the masterful 1988 film Distant Voices, Still Lives, and the 2016 study of another poet, Emily Dickinson, A Quiet Passion, fills his film with long, artfully made sequences. And as Sassoon, a combat veteran of World War I, was celebrated as one of the most famous of that war's poets, Davies spends nearly as much time focusing on the horrors that Sassoon and others endured. Ultimately, though, Benediction is about unmet longing, an emotional need that seems to have defined Sassoon's life, whether those longings involved love, as a gay man, he lived in an era when homosexuality was considered a crime, fame, marriage, and fatherhood, or the kind of torment that has afflicted veterans of war since the beginning of time. If, for no other reason, that final torment should have earned Sassoon his own personal benediction. And, of course, this whole film, made by Davies, who is a masterful filmmaker, one of my favorite films of the 1980s was Distant Voices, Still Lives, in which it was a fictional autobiographical look at his childhood growing up in Liverpool. So I'll forgive Davies many things just simply because of the way he makes a film. I had probably less of a powerful reaction to Benediction, simply because ultimately I could never really figure out what it was that tormented Davies. Was it his life as a closeted gay man? Was it the nightmare of war? And the guy, his younger brother died in the campaign of Gallipoli. He himself saw much action on the Western Front in France. So those parts of the movie really spoke to me. But particularly in the later scenes of his later life, where Peter Capaldi is playing him. He's just this crotchety old man. And I just think there was an unclear aspect to Benediction that didn't speak to me. But overall, it's a film that needs to be studied because, just as I say, Davies is a masterful filmmaker.
This film works on multiple levels. And then I was maybe a bit hesitant in some ways, and I don't know, for some of the same reasons that you mentioned, Dan, but Benediction, you know, it sort of follows this chronological path and then it doesn't. And so we sort of switch back and forth, and there are a couple of things that happen that we don't know really what the time frame is for them. The things that I really liked about Benediction, one, Jack Loudon's performance.
Yeah.
I think he's incredible. I mean, he's been in other films. I mean, they should just cast him in almost everything, although he is a little bit too reminiscent of Tom Hiddleston in terms of his looks, I think. But he was a huge plus. I also thought that the witty dialogue and the repartee among all of the characters was really notable. I mean, there are some truly funny, acerbic, satirical, sardonic lines in this particular movie that you do just sort of wonder at just sort of the scripting and so forth. It's based on real characters, so I don't know what sort of – you mentioned longing. I characterized it as yearning. I don't know if Benediction captures the real life of Siegfried Sassoon. I don't really know all that much about him, but I think it does capture this sort of betwixt and between state of these people who were living between the wars, who were trying to – find their footing in various ways. We never really know if Sassoon has a career or a job or anything. Of course, I probably related to his, quote, long-suffering wife, Hester, to a greater extent than maybe some of the other characters. But hey, she knew from the very beginning sort of what the deal was, and she seemed willing to go along with that. So I thought, as a study of war or PTSD, I thought that this film succeeded in that respect. I don't know about some of the other aspects of the story it was trying to tell.
And I've liked some of Davies' other films. You mentioned some. And I think this is actually a perfect companion piece to his Emily Dickinson film, A Quiet Passion, which I liked. I didn't get any sense of feeling or emotion from this movie. It felt like a wax museum almost. Like, all of his movies are about repression to a certain extent. This almost felt too repressed as a film, not just the characters, but as a film. And I appreciate the fact that this movie isn't just totally about this guy suffering. You also see some of the joys in his life and the loves in his life. And I like that about it. But yeah, this moved glacially for me. It's pushing 2.5 hours and it felt twice as long. So I would say if you've never seen a Davies film, go back to his early stuff. Benediction was not my cup of tea.
Right. And that was our discussion of Benediction. Let's close with Resurrection. As with any other movie genre, the appeal of horror differs from one movie fan to the next. For me, horror is best portrayed when its causes are left to the imagination. And this is especially true when the horror in question seems to involve mental illness. For the first part of its running time, Resurrection, written and directed by Andrew Siemens, begs the question, is Margaret, played by Rebecca Hall, suffering a mental breakdown, or is she actually being threatened by a mysterious stranger named David, played by Tim Roth? Her daughter, Abby, played by Grace Kaufman, is pretty sure she knows the answer. Abby's opinion, though, doesn't quite jive with the direction that filmmaker Siemens ultimately takes, which, without giving anything away, is both graphically violent and determinedly obscure. The result is a movie that is far more confounding than conventionally scary.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen a lot of horror movies in recent years that are dealing with symbolism and cryptic story beats, and then at the end just go totally insane with
Grand
blood
Grignol,
and guts,
yes,
and violence. Kind of like what Takashi Miike did back with Audition. Yeah. And this movie kind of follows
which was effective.
This kind of follows a similar track. And having no idea where it was going when I saw this, the ending does kind of come out of nowhere. But I think it does make logical sense with everything that you've seen and all the themes that have been set up. So, this movie feels like it was designed to be divisive and divisive in its last 10 to 15 minutes when it really swings for the fences. I appreciated the swing. I thought it mostly worked, even though it is, you are kind of laughing in incredulity because you can't believe where that it's really committing to this. That's really where we're going here. But all the way through, Rebecca Hall's performance in this is so good and so courageous in a way. There's a monologue she has in it's like 40 minutes into the movie that is one long, like 8 or 9 minute shot that
just
holds on her face,
slowly
pushing in on her face. It is a virtuoso piece of acting. So for no other reason, see it for Rebecca Hall's performance. She's been so good for so long, and I still feel like she's almost kind of underrated, even though
she gets
good reviews for her acting,
but she's still
underrated.
She's not like a star, and that's okay,
because she's willing to do movies like this.
Right. And of course, Resurrection is the type of horror film that I would typically gravitate toward because it involves real people and not monsters or aliens or
crummy clowns,
you know, right.
Yeah, the threat is grounded in some way.
Correct. And
until it isn't.
I thought she did an excellent job of sort of portraying the fear that you would have after having been subjected to violence in its sort of various incarnations. And I liked, again, the monologue is virtuoso performance. I liked her relationship with her daughter, too, because her daughter—
Grace Kaufman was really good in this film.
And because the daughter's, like, trying to figure out, is mom, like, totally losing it? Like, what's going on? Here's my mom, who's this big executive.
And she's lying to me.
Right, and all these things are happening. And then she's having a relationship with one of her coworkers or her subordinates or whatever. And I liked that guy and the role that he played in this whole thing. In the end, this just did not work for me. Sorry. Sorry, I could not. Right, I could not go there ultimately. But Resurrection, you know, it's a pretty tight film, and so that's good. Tim Roth, of course, although he looks very, I guess, bedraggled in this.
It reminds me of the role he played in that Woody Allen film so many years ago. I can't remember the name of it, in which he was the person
who was exonerated.
They get him out,
right?
And he shows up at the party, and he's just a predator trying to prey on all the women there. Tim Roth is amazing. At any rate, that was our discussion of Resurrection. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and Murray Pat Truthart and I discussed Benediction and Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again seek out the best of cinema wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the writer Laurie McMaster Bugeaud. When you choose an action, you choose the consequences of that action. When you desire a consequence, you had damn well better take the action that would create it. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.